And welcome to In the Moment. I am Lori Walsh. USD's Idea Fest celebrates research, creative scholarship, and academic engagement. It runs tomorrow and Thursday on the campus in Vermilion. This year's faculty keynote address is from Professor Brennan Jordan. He's Associate Professor of Earth Sciences at USD. He's here in the studio with me. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Let's go ahead and give a quick overview of what Idea Fest is and what it means to the students, and then we'll talk about your address.
Sure. Well, Idea Fest is an annual program at the University of South Dakota that gives students a chance to present their research or results of creative activity or present other kinds of activities, level of student engagement, other kinds of projects that they've been involved in the community. It's something that gives both graduate and undergraduate students a chance to present their work. And this is a special year. This is the 25th year of Idea Fest here at USD.
Wow. So what sort of things can come out of sort of challenging students to, you know, put something like that together and participate in something of that scale?
Sure. Well, students have been participating in research and other kinds of scholarly activities for many years, but unless they have an opportunity to present that material to a crowd, to a group, then, you know, they're really missing a part of the cycle of that kind of work. And so Idea Fest gives them an on-campus opportunity to present the exciting work they've been doing.
Right.
And it's just one more incentive to do the work. It's one more incentive to do it well and to be able to organize their thoughts and communicate about it. And communicating about the work you do is an important part of it. And so it's really a critical aspect of learning to do research or any of these kinds of activities.
Is that generally exciting for you now at this stage? And can you think back to when you were a student, grad student, and was it traumatic for you in the beginning, or was it always sort of like, I cannot wait to share all this work with the world?
Well, I think it's probably some of both for most students, and it certainly was for me. You have been working really hard and are excited about your work, and so you want to tell people about it, but there's always anxiety about presenting, especially your first few times. And for many students, this is one of the first times that they're presenting this kind of work outside of the classroom.
Yeah. Traumatic was the wrong word. We'll say unnerving, right? We're not going to slip into hyperbole already.
Sure. No. They, you know, the students do great. It's a fun event. I was the chair of the organizing committee for 3 years, and it was a wonderful thing to be involved with and to see the students gearing up and presenting their work.
Right. So, faculty keynote address, and we're talking about Iceland. Why Iceland? What's your connection there?
Well, I have been going to Iceland since the year 2000, and have both research and teaching interests in Iceland. I've done research projects on the tectonic and volcanic history of Iceland, and have taken groups of undergraduate researchers to Iceland in 4 years. And so that's one piece of my relationship with Iceland. And then the other is that I teach an annual course in geology in Iceland. I teach a course for South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, offered to a national student base, students from all over the country. It's called the Iceland Volcanology Field Camp. And so it's a 4-week intensive field course where we learn about volcanology and doing field work on volcanoes in a place that has wonderful volcanoes and amazing scenery and all sorts of scientific elements of interest that make it ideal for a place to both do research and teach courses like this.
I'm not a scientist, but I'm already geeking out. Like, someone needs to carry the luggage or something for the scientists, right? Just because I want to go. Let's talk about the geography, the geology there. The first thing I think is that it's beautiful. Tell me what it looks like.
Well, Iceland is an absolutely magical place, and that's why it has been seeing a really rapid growth in attention from tourists in the last decade. It is kind of uniquely scenic because it's a landscape of a lot of moss and rock and ice. It has a kind of starkness because it's, you know, there aren't many forests around. It's a lot of open country. But it's different than a lot of stark country. It's different than, say, the desert. It's green with, you know, a million different greens.
Yeah.
And it the presence of the glaciers is something, too. But Iceland is only 10% covered by ice. So it's not, one shouldn't think of it as an icy wonderland. But the presence of big glaciers that feed right down to the edge of farm fields and the edge of the ocean it's just visually stunning. And so that's a big part of Iceland. And, you know, I said Iceland is only about 10% covered by ice. If I were to name it, I'd have called it Falsland, or an Icelandic Fossland, because it is just covered with beautiful waterfalls.
Really?
All over the country. It's
so why
really
is that?
Quite
wonderful. What creates that then?
Well, the geology is very active. And so it's a country that has active volcanoes, active faults, and this kind of tectonic activity constantly generates topography. It creates a landscape. And it's also an area with a very wet climate. And so when you combine the active geology generating topography and regenerating topography with a climate that's constantly delivering rain and snow, and the snow's melting, you end up with water just streaming over cliffs all over the country. I can't tell you, you know, one of the areas in the far northwest of the country where I take students, and we get out into the field every day in the mountains at the head of a fjord. When I think about it, every moment of the day I can hear a waterfall somewhere.
Really?
Whether it's a big waterfall in the distance or a little trickle waterfall right near me, it's really quite amazing.
How fast, when you say it's, you know, it creates the topography, on what scale, time-wise?
Sure. Well, one thing about Iceland is that it is geologically very young. The oldest rocks in Iceland are 16 million years old, which I know sounds old, but geologically speaking, that would make these rocks younger than any rocks that have been created by tectonic and deep earth processes in South Dakota by quite a bit. And the oldest rocks, or the youngest rocks of that kind in South Dakota, are around 49 million years old. And most of the rocks, say, in the Black Hills are, you know, over 1.7 billion years old and up to 2.5 billion years old. So 16 million years old is really young, and that's the oldest rocks. Much of the central part of the country is dominated by rocks that are less than 10,000 years old.
Really?
And so,
how do you know that?
Well, when it comes to the older rocks, we determine the ages of those mostly using potassium-argon dating, or a derivative of that called argon-argon dating. We also do some uranium-lead dating of zircon crystals in the older rocks. When it comes to knowing the ages of younger rocks, we more commonly utilize carbon dating, something pretty familiar to people, often for, you know, even archaeological purposes. And then Iceland has itself been inhabited since 874, and the Icelanders as a people are particularly literate and have a long literary tradition, and so there's really good record keeping for the events of the time from 874 up till now.
Really?
Yeah, it's a very special aspect of Iceland. Iceland is intriguing to me. Yes. Scientifically, scenically, and also culturally.
Yes, and poetically. and from a photographer's, artistically.
Oh,
yeah. Everything is there.
So
let's get back to that me carrying your luggage thing when we go.
yeah.
We'll create some great radio from in the moment from Iceland.
Oh, absolutely. You'd be welcome.
So when you have a younger, 16 million year old, rocks at your disposal to study? What difference does it make? What can you learn? What are you looking for when you go to do the research? What are some of those key goals and inquiries?
Sure. Well, to understand that, I need to say a little bit about the plate tectonic setting of Iceland. Iceland is in a unique position in plate tectonic perspective. It sits on the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and it's really the only place on Earth where a significant bit of the mid-ocean ridge system is exposed above the sea. And so it provides a unique opportunity to see mid-ocean ridge processes on land. And it's a lot easier to study things on land than it is in the deep oceans. And so that's one aspect of Iceland. But you might say, well, why is Iceland above sea level? Why is the mid-ocean ridge above sea level at Iceland? And the reason is that Iceland's really a combination of two processes. It's the mid-ocean ridge, but there's also a hot spot like Hawaii. And Hawaii is a hot spot without a mid-ocean ridge, out really in the middle of a plate. But Iceland's a place where it's just a coincidence. There's a hot spot right under the mid-ocean ridge. And so it's tectonically interesting and tectonically complicated because you have these two distinct processes. And the result of having these two processes is a greater diversity of volcanic rocks. I think a lot of your listeners who've had just a little exposure to geology might know that the ocean floor created at mid-ocean ridges is made of a volcanic rock called basalt. And if they've ever seen video of volcanic eruptions in Hawaii, they've seen that red hot rock that when it cools solidifies to black lava rock, and that's also basalt. So those two different processes that are responsible for Hawaii and mid-ocean ridges both make basalt. So you'd think, well, okay, in Iceland, maybe we should just have basalt. But that's not the case. In Iceland, there's a diversity of volcanic rocks that goes from basalt, which is still dominant, all the way to the what I would call the opposite kind of magma, the kind that we have at Yellowstone.
Okay.
Rhyolite magma. It's the same kind of magma that makes obsidian. And so there are actually obsidian lava flows in Iceland. And that would surprise even most geologists. Most geologists don't know that. Yeah. And so it's a fun place to go to study the way that these tectonic processes work together to create this greater diversity of volcanoes and volcanic rocks.
That's fascinating. So your speech has something to do with sustainability, and put that into perspective when we talk about Iceland and sustainability. What are we talking about?
Sure. Well, this is going to be a big shift of focus from what I had just talked about, because my speech is really focused on Iceland as an example of two things. It's focused on Iceland as an example of a past of unsustainable practices.
Okay.
There are many ways in which humans lived in Iceland between their arrival in 874 and, say, 1950 that were destructive to their environment. Well, they deforested the island, it's in a sensitive environment where forests were already kind of marginal, and so when they chopped the forests down, those forests were not regenerated. Some of the forest they removed was to create pastures, so that wasn't going to be regenerated in any case. But the loss of the forest then also led to soil loss and overgrazing, mostly by sheep. Also led to soil loss, so that's another unsustainable practice that's had a long history in Iceland. And overfishing, you know, they've had several episodes where the fisheries off of Iceland have been damaged. Some of that because of Icelandic practices, and some of that by foreign fishing in times when Iceland had less control over overfishing in the country. Now, those are the unsustainable elements of the past. The what my presentation is about that, but it's also about the cutting-edge nature of how Iceland is today with respect to sustainability.
Okay.
Because Iceland is often highlighted as a place for sustainable energy innovation. They have their electricity generation is essentially carbon free. It's entirely by hydroelectric power and geothermal power, and that geothermal power takes advantage of the volcanic nature of the island. So it does tie back to the areas of interest for me. And so that's something that I'll be highlighting in my presentation. But they've also been able to enact policies that have worked to try and reforest and to restore their fisheries.
Possible to reforest?
Yeah. It's interesting the ways in which it's different. The original native forest was a birch forest, and they didn't have any conifers. They hadn't had any conifers since about 1.1 million years ago. We know that from the paleontological record. But conifers can be very successful in that environment, and so a lot of their reforestation is with conifers, which also are will provide better agricultural forestry.
What's the population? How does the population impact the march towards sustainability?
Well, the population is about 330,000, and right. So that makes this easier. It's one of the most sparsely populated countries in the world if you look at population density. The population is strongly concentrated in Reykjavik and a few other cities, but very strongly in Reykjavik. And so that makes some of this easier. It's a big country with not so many people. So changing policy, it's a little like turning a smaller ship,
Right.
They're able to respond more readily.
Can the rest of the world learn from the turning of that smaller ship?
I think they can. First of all, Iceland provides technological cutting edge concepts for some things like energy, but also provides a kind of policy framework for things like what they've been able to do with restoring their fisheries. They've been able to act aggressively in some cases, and they've really improved their own lot. And so it's a really interesting country to consider in all these different facets.
Yeah. What do you like the most about going there? What do you look forward to each year as you've been more than once? Like, what do you look forward to about going back?
Well, I a big smile comes over my face when I step on the ground in Iceland. And it's, in mid to late summer when I'm there, it's cool, not cold. It's mild. I'm coming from someplace hot. And so it's the feel of the air. You land out on the end of this volcanic peninsula. Usually land tired because it's an overnight flight. And I immediately drive out to some of the places where I teach about volcanoes, and right on the coast, right where the Mid-Atlantic Ridge comes on shore. And just soak in this land of rock and moss and grass and distant volcanoes clad in ice, and it renews my spirit.
Yeah. I'm renewed just to hearing you talk about it. Days and nights, what are they like there?
Well, yeah, I've only been there in summer into the very earliest bit of fall, and arriving in midsummer, it's light through the middle of the night.
Okay.
And so you could be reading a book at 11, midnight, 1 without a headlamp.
Yeah.
And so that takes some getting used to. I'm pretty used to it, but it's something that my students always have a little trouble with. And if you're around into mid to late August, and especially into early September, it does start to get dark enough that you get to see some northern lights.
Oh.
And the northern lights in Iceland can be spectacular, easier to see if one can go there in the winter and really have a lot more night
right.
to take them in. But the weather can be a big question mark that time of year. So I've gotten to enjoy some really dynamic northern lights in one of my visits when I was there in September. But it's really the light through the night that impacts me and my group the most.
What mystery do you want to unlock next as a scientist?
Well, I've been studying Iceland's oldest central volcano, which is about 14 million years old, and did a preliminary research expedition to it in 2011 and studied, mapped, and collected samples in about half of it. And I'm kind of raring to get back and map and sample the rest of this old central volcano out in the really gorgeous Westfjords part of the country.
Yeah.
When I was there with students, we got dropped off by a boat at the end of a fjord for 2 weeks, and we were just out on our own there. It's not how the experience usually is for me with students in Iceland. Usually we're driving around and camping in sort of public campgrounds, but that was a unique experience, and both scientifically and for the magic of the place. I can't wait to get back there.
I know. Sign me up. You've been listening to my new favorite person, Brennan Jordan. He's an associate professor of earth sciences at the University of South Dakota here in Vermilion. And the presentation, you can go see it, is called Iceland from Unsustainable Past to Sustainable Future. It begins at 3:30 p.m. Central on Thursday as part of Vermilion's, or USD's, Idea Fest. It's at the Munster University Center Ballroom. Thank you so much for bringing this really rich scientific discussion to us throughout the state.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure, and thank you for having me.